Gary Wurkamp.
And she's Jill Hughes.
Join us for
The Untold Stories of
Shadow Gallery.
Welcome back to Shadow Gallery, The Untold Stories. This is episode number 3, and I'm here with my co-host and Shadow Gallery band member Gary Wurkamp and guitarist Brent Allman. So where are we in the history of the band? They had just released their debut album. They needed a couple more band members to have a stable lineup so they could go on tour. April 1993 saw the recruitment of guitarist, keyboardist Gary Wurkamp. Another lineup addition followed in April 1994 with drummer Kevin Sofera. With this new solidified lineup, Shadow Gallery released its second studio recording on July 11, 1995, titled Carved in Stone on Magna Carta Records. The album clocked in at a little over 70 minutes. The lineup this time was Mike Baker on lead vocals, Brent Allman on guitars and vocals, Gary Wurkamp on guitar, piano, synthesizer, vocals, and orchestral arrangements, Chris Ingalls on synthesizer and piano, Carl Cannon James on bass, flute, vocals, and vocal arrangements, Kevin Sofera on drums, and artwork was done again by Sean Lux. So some of my personal favorite tracks on this album are Crystalline Dream, Don't Ever Cry, Just Remember, Deeper Than Life, and Alaska. It really felt like the band had matured a lot from the debut album to this second album. It was tighter, better production, and also the songwriting leveled up. Was this because you joined the band, Gary?
No.
Now, in all seriousness, I'm excited to hear the untold stories about how this album came to life. I have a feeling you all have some hilarious anecdotes for us today. So to start, Gary, tell us a little bit about how Shadow Gallery found you and the audition process to join the band.
Well, it would be a little more fair to say that I had found them, I guess, thankfully. There was a big snowstorm and I was snowed in at my girlfriend's house when my father called me.
See how relevant and off topic I am already? And my dad called to say some guy called, and then I didn't get home for 2 weeks, and I went to my dad's, and he's like, oh, call this number. And it was somebody who knew a guy named Dave Ferrara who knew Ron Evans. And I finally tracked these people down, and I got this guy, Dave Ferrara, the night before he moved. And this is before cell phones, of course. And I called him, and he said, hey, man, it's good. I've been waiting 2 weeks for you to call me back. I'm moving, and I'm not going to have a phone for a while. And I said, oh, well, that's good luck, and what's up? And they finally put me in touch with Mike, and I called, and they said they needed a member to tour Japan. That's how it was presented to me. And I said, okay, I'll tour Japan.
Little did he know.
And little did I, yeah, haven't gotten farther that way than Athens, I guess. Brant, from your point of view, what were you guys thinking? I don't know that anything that happened just before I joined the band.
Well, just before you joined the band, we were still looking for people some multi-instrumentalists. We found this one cat. I can't recall the guy's name, but he sounded a lot and played a lot like Trevor Rabin, which was cool, but wasn't ultimately the right fit. And then we met Gary, and Gary brought over some tapes of stuff he did, and we showed him our stuff essentially, and we all kind of hung out for a while and thought, well, this is working out real nice. Maybe we'll offer him some kind of per diem or something, and then we'll get him to hang out with us for a little while. Oh, hey, you want to join the band? And because we don't have any money to give you.
I can tell you how that went down for me.
I'm sure it was great.
I wish I had these pictures. So Carl and I Carl took over the business end of stuff, and we said, all right, we'd work out, a price. And so I had a contract because I just got back from this small tour. And so I used that and I just changed it up, and it was ridiculously small money. It was like, I need X amount per night. I get my own hotel room, 3 meals, and my per diem is this. And he said, okay. And I said, well, wait 1 second. And I said, I got one more demand. And I drew a picture, And it was, I probably spent like a half hour. This is, I had all the time in the world back then, of me center stage, really big. And then all the other guys in the band really far away back behind this curtain and 10,000 fans. And they were all holding up these signs that said, "We love Gary. Gary's the best. Gary's the, you know." And so I faxed it to him. You know, that was the only way to get it to where his job. So he faxed me back like immediately. He goes, "That's a great idea. How about this?" And he drew a picture of me, and I had a brown paper bag over my head with eyes cut out. He said, "We can go with the brown paper bag." And it went back and forth. And I think the next one I did was like, "How about you, you guys just stay up there on stage?" And then I drew a picture of me in a limousine, like with a beer and a bunch of girls all around me. I said, "I'll just play from the limo. You guys get up there and sweat it out on stage." And we went back and forth, probably about maybe three or four drawings each. And by the time we were done with all the drawings after like a couple of weeks, that this tour was all of a sudden didn't have any dates to it. So he called me one day. He said, "Dude, you want to just join the band? Just be an equal member." And I was like, okay. And all right, cool. I'll see you tomorrow. And that was it.
Hey, look at you. You're still there.
Oh, the Gamma Ray tour.
Been trying to quit since that day I joined. quit smoking. Not the band. Quit smoking. But Brent, I would say, and this is, you were probably the last person I kind of bonded with. Oh, you were the first person I bonded with, but then the last till we became like writing partners. But do you remember the end of my audition? Do you remember the audition?
A little bit.
I couldn't find Carl's house. I was so late. I was like a half hour late. And again, I had to keep driving back to Turkey Hill to call him. You know, because, and he's like, no, go this way. He goes, "Oh, you got to turn on this other road." And so,
yeah, it was hard to blame his house.
It was. And so thank you for saying that. So I drive for a bit and I'd be like, "I can't believe it." And now I'm driving faster because I'm so late that I keep missing it. I'm like, "Damn, I got to drive back to Turkey Hill and call him again." You know, so I just kept calling him. So I was off to a bad start. I thought, I was like, you know what? Let's just get this over with. These guys are going to want some guy who's a half hour late. And I brought my my 3-pound small little PV amp.
Yes, the tiny little. Yeah. I forgot all about that PV amp. That's great. The legendary little, what, 3-inch speaker or something it had in it?
Yeah, to show you guys that, you know, I traveled
I'm
light.
I'm in business. I brought my little.
This is what I'm going to tour with, by the way.
The PV practice amp. Oh, Lordy. Yes, I do recall that. It was on mini a Gary cassette.
Yeah, what kind of things did they have you do, Gary, at the audition?
The first thing, and I thought this was so weird, is they said, "Now close your eyes and touch your nose with each hand." And I swear I wasn't drunk at that point.
Say the alphabet backwards.
Actually, I heard Dance of Fools. I talked about that in the last podcast. So, but that was the only song I ever heard. So Carl played me Dark Town. We got done. I played you a song or two of mine, and Brent, you were probably the most direct, and I guessed that you were the oldest brother of a couple kids by the time halfway through the rehearsal. Because like Chris just kept laughing, Mike's like, "Yeah, man, this is great. You know, we're gonna have a new guy in the band," and Carl's like so into the music, he's still acting like he just finished Dark Town mix the night before. And after everybody got done laughing, you were like, "All right, Gary, we're going to see if you can actually play that guitar, so why don't you get it out of the case, hook it up to that
Go
professional
strap
amp.
Strap it up.
plug it into that, it over that big the big amplifier you brought, and play.
Turn it on." Yeah, I don't have a great memory of that. I remember laughing about the Eagles, and I remember that. I don't remember a whole lot of that other stuff, but... But I remember us singing harmonies together or something and just smiling about that. I thought that was cool.
Say goodbye to the morning. I grew a little impatient and because you guys didn't know what you were going to ask me to do. It was like clear that you guys weren't used to auditioning. You were like, "Let's have him sing harmonies." And Mike and Chris like, "Well, to what? What's he going to sing?" And Mike's like, "I just have him sing to me." And Carl's like, no, wait. We're going to have him sing one of the choruses." And you're like, "Well, hang on a second, Gary. We're going to have you sing harmonies now. I'm like, yeah, I got that. I got that. So I'm getting impatient. And Chris is like, he says he got it. He got it. He's running around the room. Mike's looking for his iced tea. And you're like, all right, let's do Sigma out of the morning. And it was obvious that you guys hadn't started rehearsing yet because none of you knew who was going to sing what part.
No.
So I was just sitting there waiting, going, what, I can sing. This is like ridiculous.
You sing this
you want me
note?
To sing the third? Yeah. And eventually I got really bored because you guys were trying to work out. Mike's like, no, that's my part. And Chris is like, I'll do the other part. And the car's like, listen, I do this part. That's the part I'm going to do live. Let's not change it now. And it's going on and on. And I'm like, you know, going, I want to get home and watch Seinfeld or whatever.
He's not embellishing any of this, Jill. This is how I remember it.
So I was like, what do you want me to sing? You want the major seventh? And so I started adding harmonies. I was like, you want the ninth? And I only heard the song one time at this point. And so you guys stopped the audition, and it was a really good moment in my life, right? I think you stopped. You're like, all right, you can sing. Now, Gary, we're going to see if you can play some keyboards. I was like, okay. All right, big brother.
All that wasn't enough.
Point me to the keyboard.
I do remember. I don't remember what you played necessarily. I think you had like a piano sound or something. You were
I improvised.
Yeah, you were doing some neat arpeggiated stuff. I was like, holy moly, man. This guy does everything good.
You know what's funny is I didn't know really much about you guys, but you were like the same style as me. So I got lucky, really, because I was playing, you know, things that I would just play. And now you're like, that's the same stuff we do. And I'm like, oh, but that's the same thing I do. Like, I thought I was the only prog guy in the area. We're the prog band around here.
And we all like root beer? Oh, my God. I don't think luck had much to do with it, really, but yeah.
What did you ask at the end of the audition, Brent?
Oh, yeah. What I asked was this. I said, listen, you know, you play well. Everything's great. But one thing, you have to hate the Eagles.
And the first thing that came to my head was Hotel California. Yeah. I said, I've probably heard Hotel California enough, but the Eagles, they're a really good band. And then I'm like, oh, and why is this keyboard player laughing at everything I say? And then Mike's laughing. Carl's like, you know, and
and he's like, well, I kind of like Hotel California. I'm like, no, man, we mean the football team. And he's like, oh, yeah, screw the Eagles. I like the Cowboys. At which point Carl and Chris and Mike all are like, boo, you know? And of course,
Chris just started screaming with amazement. Mike, I never seen Mike ever that pissed off.
I'm on Team Carl and Mike.
Well, there's no room for you.
No room for me.
Yeah, as a keyboard player.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. That was a funny moment.
Next time I'll wear my Eagles jersey.
That tipped the scales because you guys all had your football teams. Not if you want any more royalties.
Yeah, that was a funny thing. We were all super into football all the time. And that was a funny, funny thing. But yeah, that Jill is the last question of the night. When he answered the Cowboys, I was like, oh, well, this guy's going to be all right.
When was the last time the Cowboys were in a Super Bowl?
I believe that's a different podcast, Jill, for different people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could have had like a 26-year-old, you know, kid by now.
Yeah. So exactly. How did you finally come to the conclusion that you were going to join the band or they were going to invite you to join the band? What was like the deciding factor there?
I had nowhere else to go.
Well, I think once we realized how we clicked, it was just easy.
You know, it's funny. We worked together, but the only time we really saw each other, because it seemed like we were working at different times or in small groups. Like, you know, I'd work with Carl on this and Chris and I would do something. But then come Sunday, we were all out at Rookie's Sports Bar watching our football teams because they had 20-30 TVs, and we'd all see each other at a sports bar. It'd be like the only time we were all in the same room other than my audition for like five years.
It's pretty accurate. I mean, there was not a lot of get-togethers when we weren't writing. Anyway, Jill, we were all, you know, in our mid-20s there, or at least Gary and I were. Everybody else was older.
Everybody else was in their 40s.
Yeah, they're not that much older. But yeah, we were the, you know, having a really good time with life, essentially. And it was a difficult record to make, and we'll get into that when you're ready.
Was there ever a record that didn't have its challenges? I don't think so.
This one had a particular challenge, though.
Well,
this one was particularly challenging.
We started it at the Farmhouse Studio. That just was called Shadow Gallery, right? At the Shadow Gallery. You guys couldn't think of another name. So it was like, what are we going to call the studio? How about Shadow Gallery? Good enough for me. Let's go to Rookies. Let's go get some wings. And then I remember you took me to the rehearsal studio. You were like, hey, we didn't tell you this, but we got a rehearsal studio. You come with me. I'll show you.
It's real swank.
I was like, cool. And I walk in, and there's green foam all over the walls. It's this old two-car garage that obviously somebody planned to do, you know, demolition on and just didn't get around to it. And
and luckily, it smelled like old cigarettes from the previous band.
Right.
It smelled like beer, piss, and old cigarettes in that place.
You know, as soon as you said that, the smell came right back to me.
I know, it does. It comes right back to you.
Smell and like Budweiser.
That real dusty kind of cigarette smell. That's what... Because it was treated like that by, you know, people that were there before us. And we love those people, but, you know, it stank a little bit. But anyway, we got used to it.
Yeah, so there were other bands, I guess, rented this place out. And then
yes, who shall remain nameless for the moment.
For their own protection. But, Jill, you should have seen this place. It was...
It was a wreck.
It was swanky. Yeah, I can't believe how much we accomplished in that room. I just remember at one point walking around going, all right, I got to walk to the other part of the studio which was just one big room. Because it smells like somebody just dumped Budweiser, a warm Budweiser over my head. And I'd go to like the farthest point and it was no different.
Listen, though, this was our dumpster fire, okay? Nobody else could say the things we could say about it. It's our dumpster.
You guys were like, well, what do you think of our cool rehearsal studio?
Did it smell as bad as the tour bus?
Oh, that smelled like death. Oh,
yeah, that's that's a different thing. It didn't smell like sweat and feet. It smelled completely different than that. No, I don't know if it was that bad.
2010. Yeah, that was
the Petri bus.
Stories for another day.
Because I remember you asked me, you were like, what do you think of our cool rehearsal studio? And I said, do you guys know any other bands looking for a guitar player? No, we did... a lot of recording and rehearsing there. And then we started rehearsing together with drummer Cliff Fritz. Great drummer.
Yeah, I love that guy.
And then you rehearsed with him for like, I don't know, 75 straight days or something.
I don't know. I bonded with a guy. I still think about him every now and then, if you can believe that, when I hear a certain kind of drum or whatever. Like, I bet Cliff would rip on this.
No, he's fabulous at everything. But and then you did, for some reason... I think you had the majority of the rehearsals with Cliff in those days. It kind of fell more on your shoulders.
I think it was, I was closer to the studio than you were. I think that's probably what it was.
Yeah, I was like 45. I was like almost an hour, 45, you're 50 minutes.
Much farther away.
But I would do it like on Wednesdays, and you did like Monday, Tuesday, Thursday or something like that. And then I went there on a Wednesday and I met Cliff and we found this note. The first of many, many notes that were to come from the album. This note set the pace for all the future notes that came.
I know what's
going on. It was a joke. I picked it up. I go, oh, these guys are so funny. I love it. You know, they're witty. And the note said something like, hey, it's been fun. It's been great. But, you know, I'm taking off and good luck. And it was from Chris. And I was like, that's great. And, you know, he was supposed to meet us at the studio. And I guess he went early and left that note. And Cliff and I were waiting around for him to rehearse with him. And then we drove to his girlfriend's house and said, let's find him. This is too funny to be true, or it's too true to be funny. And, well, then I never saw Chris again for about a year and a half.
Yeah, he bailed.
He had to take care of some things. And
yep, he had to do what he had to do.
He moved out of state. No one knew where he went for a while. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know if we should talk about that or not.
Well... Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it had his reasons.
It's a lot harder to find people back then.
Oh, it was impossible.
Oh, yeah, there was no pagers. I mean, or at least we couldn't afford them. And there wasn't no cell phones. And, you know, you had hope that you knew somebody that knew somebody that knew where the, you know, person might have been, you know. Then it became kind of I was really worried, you know, for a while. Until we kind of figured out what was going on. And then it was just like, all right, well, now what are we going to do? And luckily we had Gary in the band because Gary could play everything, right? So we essentially...
Not like that. I couldn't.
Well, you did a fine job, sir. So
even now, I say that to people that are like, you know, when we talk about Chris, I'm going, do you realize I'm not as good now at 50 as he was at 20?
Yeah, so that's how you became the keyboardist, pianist for the band.
I don't know. It was all going by so fast. I was supposed to be in Japan already. And instead, now I'm learning this big, long piano solo. And
oh, you're talking about Ghost Ship. Yeah, that's right. You learned Ghost Ship.
Like 22,000 notes in this piano solo. My solution was, let's get Jens Johansson.
That would have been fine.
But this was right at the same time he just joined Stradivarius, or about that time. So he's like, well, I'm doing this Stradivarius thing right now. Let's see how it goes in a few months. And I was like, oh, well, he's not that interested. Yeah, so I said, I kind of stood up, you know, the new guy, the small guy at the table, the big Shadow Gallery table with the leaders of the band. I said, maybe I could do the piano solo. and you and Carl looked at me like, please, come on. This is a serious meeting. We need to find a real player.
please, sir, may I play some piano? I don't remember that part necessarily. I was like, oh, yeah, you know, that would be awesome.
No, I'm just kidding.
Go make that happen.
I think you started saying prayers for me, like in some sort of Gaelic Indian language. Ugatata piano helaka. I was like, what does that mean? You're like, practice real hard, man.
Oh, some Lakota, right. Well, hey, let's put some color to this. So now our keyboard player and one of my all-time favorite people isn't there anymore, right? So now what do we do? Well, not only am I, you know, missing like one of my all-time best friends, but my writing partner and the person I hung out with pretty much every day, it seemed like, is just gone. Now what are we going to do? Well, Gary's like, well, I can play these things. And it turned out that, yeah, he could. It was, holy moly, this is great. You know, why don't you keep writing stuff and keep adding things here and there? So that's kind of what it came down to. We wanted to get a better piano sound for the Ghost Ship solo that Chris Engel recorded. And he did that on like an 8-track machine, a Tascam 8-track in a church. Not the best sounding piano recording ever, but, you know, it ended up, we kept it because it had some kind of magic to it. But the stuff that Gary did, I remember being just blown away. I'm like, I can't believe you even like memorized all the notes, much less playing them, you know, so well. You know, it was unbelievable. I really can't equate it to anything else other than, you know, maybe some concert pianist, you know, looking at a piece of music and then, you know, ripping it out. It's just, it was really, really impressive.
And here comes the punchline. So I booked a studio in Scranton. He had a grand piano and, you know, I did a lot of research and I'm like, okay, we're going to record this thing. We're not going to do it in the Budweiser garage. The piano was out of tune. So I said to the guy, you know, I said, do you tune this regularly if we book something in advance? And he's like, oh, yeah, we can get it tuned. I guess what I heard was we can get it tuned. But what he meant was, oh, yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for paying for tuning. Oh, you know, so no big deal. But he wanted to charge for tuning. I went once, then Carl and I went back, and Carl was talking about ADATs and equipment. I think the guy really didn't like ADATs. He's like, oh, they're awful. We don't use them. And Carl's like, well, that's what we're using, so I'll bring them in. But it was just a hassle. Like, the studio is so uncomfortable, so uncomfortable. And
that's horrible. When a studio doesn't have a vibe, it's a bummer.
Oh, not only that, I said, can I... You know, when I got there, I said, well, I'm obviously driving an hour to check out your piano. I'd like to play it and get a feel for it before we book the time. He said, absolutely. And I'm playing it, and Carl's talking, and he comes over and goes, if you don't mind, maybe you can stop playing because, you know, I got a session tomorrow and I want to keep it in tune. And this is like right after I talked to him about it being not in tune. Now, all of a sudden, it's my fault
because I'm playing it. It was just weird.
That's shady.
But we recorded it, and I got a call from Mike Baker. You guys must have nominated him to say, I think we're just going to go with Chris's version. 10 minutes, he's like, I don't know, man. How are things? I'm like, good, Mike. What's up? Cowboys playing this week? Well, yeah, you know that. They're playing Sunday. You know, he's like, you hear they're opening a new Dunkin' Donuts in Allentown? I'm like, what's up? He goes, and so he finally told me, he goes, yeah, just going to go with Chris's version. I was like, what are you talking about? And why are you telling me this?
I don't remember that part, dude. I really don't. But I don't know if that was because we decided that Mike called you or what the deal was. I have no recollection of it. I just remember being bummed out because I thought what you recorded was good and that it's, you know, it sounded sonically better. I don't really remember what. It's fuzzy to me, that whole period there, so I can't really recall, you know, what kind of discussion we even had, but I do remember going, holy crap, you know, there's three versions of this that all of them sound good.
And 13 years of therapy, and I'm almost past it. But, but the band bought me a card, I think it was Carl, actually, that said, you're worthy, you know, and it was like a picture of, like, it just had one little thing on the front, it was like a dime. I was like, what is this? And you're, like, he was trying to, like, keep my morale up, like, by the way, we're not going to go with your version of Chris's Penis Salt, but can you go learn the rest of his songs and come down and record them now?
Well, you had played, I'm trying to remember which ones you played. Didn't you play Don't Ever Cry?
I think yeah, you played that one. I'm pretty sure I redid all of the piano.
Oh, that's right. You do. You redid all of it except for that.
You tried to make it work with MIDI for a while.
Yeah, yeah. We did some recording with MIDI, the very beginnings of MIDI, like Cakewalk 1 or something, and it was just a piece of crap. And I think we had a couple of keyboard solos and some pads or something that Chris
dumped in. Like all the cliffhanger solos, that's all Chris.
Yeah, they had previously recorded
80% Chris. You guys, you saved that, thank God. Cause
that's right. So, yeah, now I'm starting to remember because
yeah, most of the solos.
We had, what did you use? That your TS-12 or whatever the hell that was in Sonic?
That came in at the end.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, and talk about having a cool brother. My brother got into a bad car accident. It wasn't his fault. Somebody hit him from behind on the highway, messed up his neck real bad. He was out of work. He couldn't do anything. And he had an attorney, and they said, well, you know, you did sign up for the limited tort option on your insurance because you're 20 and you can't afford to spend $2,000 a year. So you can't sue for any pain and suffering above $2,000. And, you know, he lost that in work. Anyway, I shouldn't be talking about his business, except to say he was looking really bad. And then he eventually got another attorney and he got a little bit of money, not a lot, nowhere near the pain, enough to cover 6 months of pain and suffering. And he's still suffering. And the very first thing he did is he went out and bought the best keyboard, the one I wanted, so I'd have it for Shadow Gallery.
It's amazing.
Oh, that's so nice.
That's awesome. I didn't know that story.
Brother of the year.
And here are some fan questions that the band members can answer.
Questions and answers. From Room 5!
This question is from Johannes Schultz. What was the first song written for each album?
What do you think, Brent, for the first record?
I think it was Queen to the City of Ice. That's the thing that Carl and I first started really working on together. It's the thing that got us noticed by Magna Carta. They said, make more of this kind of stuff, and then we ended up making a record kind of like that. And I think the very first thing I worked on with Chris was The Dance of Fools. I remember that because I spent the day doing that with him instead of hanging out with my girlfriend on her birthday. That did not turn out well, but the song did.
Well, I think you made the right choice, although I can't say for sure. Do you remember what the other first songs written on the other albums were?
The first song that I recall on Carved in Stone that we wrote was Cliffhanger, because that kind of set the tone for the whole record. For Tyranny, I think the first song I worked on was War for Sale. And I think maybe Mystery was after that. For Legacy, you'd have to go to Gary on that one. He wrote most of that record. Probably, if I had to take a guess, it'd probably be like Cliffhanger Part 2.
Yeah, I think it was. Although we used a lot of different ideas pieced together to form First Light, but we'll save those stories for the Legacy discussion.
For Room 5, I think the first thing I heard was Vow from Gary.
Test.
And after that, maybe Manhunt. We started working on that.
Yeah, we did Manhunt, but I remember doing Andromeda Strain first, or one of the first things that we did.
We did some work on that together, on those songs.
Yeah,
that was fun. Such a good time, such a great time. For Digital Ghosts, I think it technically might be Pain was the first song that Gary and Carl started working on, but...
Yeah, I think it was. It was Pain.
Actually, before that, Gary had written a solo section or a solo piano piece with some drums, maybe, that we ended up using on the song Digital Ghost. It's that funky, jazzy piano fusion piece thing at the end. I kind of took it, transcribed it, rearranged it, and added stuff to it. Hopefully it ended up better, I don't know. But
yeah, that was actually the first thing I wrote for the Tyranny album. Speaking of firsts, but we never got to use it for a couple of records.
It was a lot of fun to play.
What is the best-selling album so far?
Probably, I would say, Michael Jackson's Thriller. It's probably the best-selling album so far. That's just a guess. Think maybe Tyranny. I don't know. I don't know if we're selling an album a minute or an album a year, but I'm pretty sure it's somewhere in between.
For Carved in Stone, what signal chain was used? How many guitar tracks for the rhythm part were used? And what amps were used?
For Carved in Stone, we used ADA guitar processors through MOSValve power amps into Marshall cabinets and also a Mesa Boogie 4x12 cabinet, recorded with a Sennheiser 414 mic, and then also probably a 57 and maybe a room mic as well, a Rode Classic room mic, maybe. It was done in a big room, and we recorded in the vocal booth, which was kind of backwards. And it was just two guitars, mostly. Brent on the left side, and I'm on the right side. And then you have single line overdubs and harmonies and solos. And that's probably more information than you even wanted to know. So there you have it.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Shadow Gallery, The Untold Story. We hope you enjoyed this episode about Carved in Stone. Next episode, we'll continue that story, where Gary and Brent will tell more about the writing and recording process and how that album came to be. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to write to us at shadowgallerypodcast@gmail.com, or you can send us a message on our Facebook page.
To start, Gary, can you tell us a little bit about how Shadow Gallery found you and the audition process to join the band?
No thanks. Didn't we just do that?